Hobby Brooks. You probably know that. Selma the duck is here. Let's see if she wants to squeak into the phone. Sweetie? That was Selma. And it is one of our Habits Detective calls, which is really a bohemian salon. Just to remind you quickly, if you want to say stuff, star 6 unmutes you. Otherwise, in the chattery, which is fluentself.com/chat, password detective 42. I seriously just talked to the first mate, and I was like, I have no idea what that's about. And he said, I have no idea who made that up. And I said, I think you did. And he disagrees. So sorry about that. The way a bohemian salon works is I am an old, eccentric, wealthy New York socialite. I am practically blind, so I cannot see you. Therefore, when you want to say things, you have to get my attention. So in the chattery, in the chat room, or pressing star 6 so that you can talk to all of us. Or we can use the hashtag AskHavi on Twitter. Hashtag, what do you call that thing? The pound sign and then AskHavi. So our theme today is actually going to be pretty loose, which is good because it gives us some room to cover a lot of ground, and it means that you can ask me pretty much whatever you want without having to worry about being on topic because our topic is broad. So here's what I've been thinking based on the brilliant suggestions that some of you made on the blog last week. We're going to talk about transitions, and we're going to talk about endings. Transitions and endings. And what it's like when we're in situations that are changing and what we do to get through that. So within that, that gives us a lot of space to talk about rituals. We can talk about processing change. We can talk about dealing with urgency. We can talk about whatever else comes up. So I'm going to make, three, possibly four brief points, and then we will open things up to questions. Again, you can ask questions in the chattery, fluentself.com/chat. Password is detective42. Or hashtag AskHavi on Twitter, or by pressing star 6. So let's just take half a second here to get settled, get focused, get a little more ready for what we're here to do, for whatever neat and unexpected side effects might come from the time we have together. Because as you know, whenever we actively put our attention towards stuff we want to work on, this can be kind of stressful. And then we go into all of our default patterns for dealing with discomfort. So we're going to try not to do that by doing three things. And you can do these now, and you can do them throughout the call if you like. So the first thing we're going to do, or really the first thing you are going to do, is connect to your body. And you can do that in absolutely any way you want. I like to just touch my hands. Sometimes I rub my wrists, or I rub circles in the palms of my hands. But you can rub your knees or your feet or touch the floor or massage the back of your neck or touch your eyebrows or pull on your ears or anything else that feels like something that's just going to plug you back into your body. And as you do that, once you're kind of right, here I am again, then you want to reconfigure your force field. And the way you do that is just by being like, hey, force field, show up, please. And you can even use your hands to kind of smooth out the space around you, unless you are currently in a cubicle and people are staring at you. Just pretend you're taking a class and, like, learning to be a mime or something. And just kind of spread out your space and smooth it out and say, hey, force field, I need a force field right now, so come back. Body, force field. And then do something inside of your force field to remind yourself that you do have some control, some limited control over how you're feeling. You can blow bubbles. You can yawn. You can stick your finger up your nose. You can write a word in your space. Just do something so that you're like, this is me having an active, conscious interaction with my space. So connecting to your body. Reconfiguring your force field by asking it to show up and by touching it, and then doing something inside of it, blowing bubbles, yawning, writing a word. And do this as often as you need to during our class, just to make sure you stay centered and grounded and with us. Okay, so let's do this. three, possibly four points about transitions, endings, everything in between that I'll make, and then I'll just open this up to questions, whatever we want to work on. Just checking through on the chattery that people are in. Right on. Looks like most of us are in. Okay. So the first point about transitions is that we are really always in them. Obviously, things end. That's part of life. But it's not always so clear-cut. There often isn't a situation where there's this one specific moment where, like, now everything is over or now something else is beginning. Really, at any given time, we're in a state of moving from one thing to the next. This is normal. It's not always fun. But it's the way things are. We're pretty much always in a state of transition. And I think sometimes there's this tendency to want everything to just settle down already or to fall into place for once and for all and to be okay for, if not forever, then for 5 minutes. And the truth is that we're always, to some extent, in a state of flow and things are always moving and changing. Part of being alive is that things happen and we react to them. And even when external things aren't happening, if you're paying attention and learning things about your relationship with yourself, there's all this internal change that's happening. So yeah, always in transition. Like it or not, things are moving. Point two, some of us are in this more than others. When you're working on your stuff, which we all are, because otherwise you wouldn't even be slightly interested in my bohemian salon, when you're working on your stuff, you're in this place of dynamic change that's pretty much constant. It's a moving process. And so we're constantly learning new things about ourselves. We're taking steps that are rewiring or rewriting our patterns and our habits and our ways of relating to things. So these changes are happening both more frequently and more quickly because that's where our focus is. So essentially, like, you're going through all these changes, but you're also going through them faster than everyone else in your life. And this can be really frustrating both for us and for everyone else who knows us because we are changing at a faster pace than they are. You're in this ongoing process of self-inquiry. You're changing faster than other people in your life. They can't always handle it. So relationships are challenged. Sometimes they fall apart. Sometimes they move and change themselves. And it's all because we are becoming different in a way, or we seem to be. We're paying attention to different things, or at the very least, we're paying attention to things in different ways than we used to pay attention to them. We're talking about new themes, we have new vocabulary, all of a sudden we're interested in things like sovereignty and healthy boundaries and relating to our monsters. It can freak people out a little bit. So just remembering again the normalcy of this as well is sometimes the change in you is happening more quickly than it is in people around you. That can be frustrating for you, frustrating for them, really scary sometimes. And point three, all of this change brings up so much identity stuff. So as we change, of course, we know that we're not becoming someone else. If anything, really, it's just the opposite, right? We're becoming more ourselves than we were before. We're getting to know ourselves and our stucknesses and things we want and need and care about at this much, much deeper level. So really, we're becoming more interesting and more fabulous, but it's not because we're someone new. It's because we're more of ourselves, yes? But we know this, not everyone else knows this, and it's complicated and scary. So we have all these people in our lives who perceive that we're becoming different people, and it can freak them out a lot. And anyway, all this change is difficult to process and difficult to take. So, yeah, I don't even know what my point is about that, other than that identity stuff is being stirred up. And it's complicated because really at any given point in time, some part of us is changing and disappearing and dying, and another part of us is more present. So identity crises, they happen. What I'm hoping we can talk about today related to transitions and endings is what helps, what we can do in times of transitions and endings to make things more comfortable for ourselves so that this sucks less and is less miserable and horrible for us and the people around us. And how we can get better at taking care of ourselves during all of this change and stress and transition, things falling apart, things coming back together. So obviously, as you might imagine, I have all kinds of thoughts and opinions on this and places we could start. But really, I would like to know since the whole fun of having a bohemian salon is having a ton of smart, interesting people who have thoughts on things. What kind of things are you wondering about related to this or kind of related to this? Maybe we should just start with where we are. Situations, things going on, things you would like to know, questions you would have on this topic or another topic. And I will just peek into the chattery. My God, there's a ton of people in there. Hi, guys. And, yeah, questions, thoughts, any of this. Or star six if you would like to say a thing. Moderating too many things. Question from Jesse. Jesse! Hi. How do you announce to your family when you're going through a change? Jesse, is that a specific, like, a specific change that you want them to know about, or do you mean more like how do you tell people to kind of put up with your crap when things are moving and changing, or how do you make it clear to them that you're kind of in this state of transition?
I guess it's anything that might change the dynamics. So it can be something small or something big.
So how do you broach the topic then? I think a lot of the time what's interesting in family stuff is there's always so many elephants in the room on the one hand, and on the other hand, the people who spend time with us, they really feel like they know us kind of. I mean, they do know us, but they, what's the best way to put it? Most people don't like change, right? It scares them. They're afraid that we will stop loving them, that we will stop caring, that we will stop being the way we are. And so on the one hand, you have the elephant in the room of everything that's changing, and on the other hand, there's kind of this there's a reluctance to bring it up because no one really wants change. So, yes, great way to put it. Aardvark, they have a frozen in time idea of us. That was exactly the way to put it. So one of the things I would do is just kind of bring all of that to the surface if you're comfortable with it and say, you know, I've been doing a lot of work on my shit lately and things are coming up. I just want you to know this is not changing us. I adore you, I adore our family, I adore where we are. Life is good. I'm just doing a lot of self-exploration right now, which means I'm going to be learning things about myself, and sometimes I'm not always going to be in a good mood, and sometimes I'm going to need more space, and sometimes I'm going to be more sensitive. But this really is a process that is helping me become more comfortable being myself, which is ultimately better for all of us. So kind of bringing some reassurance there, that you're still available, and at the same time hinting that some things might be moving and shifting, and ideally they'll be moving and shifting in ways that are helpful for everyone. That's probably where I'd start, is really just by mentioning it. And I think, it's a hard situation. It's a hard situation when we live with people because there's so much challenge in there to so many things that are, even things that aren't working, the idea that they might change can be really, really intimidating for people. All right, I'm going to stop there with that, and I'm going to keep thinking about it. And Jesse, if I have like an insight or something smart, I will let you know. In the meantime, if anyone else has stuff about that, throw it out in the chattery. A question from Aardvark about holding on and letting it go when you're afraid of ending, what it could mean, and when there are things you don't want to lose. What a beautiful question. I think there's two kind of places I'd start with that. One is acknowledging the pain of loss, because sometimes we don't spend enough time with that. So really taking the time to say, this sucks, and it's hard, and it's painful, and there are these things that are ending, and I'm sad, and I'm legitimately sad. And really giving time for that process of goodbye. because it really is it's a hard and painful thing that can't be rushed through. So acknowledging the pain of loss is the first place I'd start. The next piece is about qualities, because that is where continuity happens, in qualities. So for example, even if a relationship ends, there are qualities that we receive from that relationship, such as support or comfort or radiance or kindness. And if we want those qualities in our lives, then that will be the continuity from the last thing to the next thing, not just in the next relationship, but in our relationship with ourselves. We can say, okay, that relationship didn't work for whatever reasons and for whatever situations. However, I do recognize what was valuable for me, the qualities that really fed me in that relationship. So what am I going to do now to make sure that I have these in my life and to make sure that I don't just get them from other people? How am I giving them to myself? How am I developing these qualities in myself? And letting those qualities be the continuity from as things move and shift, what am I doing to connect to support every day? What am I doing to connect to sweetness every day in my life so that I'm not needing just external things to provide them for me? I don't know if that makes sense. And then the third piece, after acknowledging pain of loss and connecting to the qualities, finding continuity there, is having some conversations, if you're up for this, with some of the sad parts of you. Because a lot of times when we go through an ending or a transition, it dredges up a whole bunch of past things and all of our sad, abandoned, hurt, scared, frustrated past selves, and I don't mean past lives, I mean like literally in this life as we were younger and smaller. All that pain comes to the surface as well. So I like to, I do this in the bath. If you know, I just find it easier to do it with like lots of noise. I like to have running water and things like that. But talk it out and say, what do you need? What do you want to tell me? How can I help? What can we do with all this pain? And how much of it is from now? How much do I need to deal with now? And how much do I want to acknowledge from then? So that's probably the three things I would start with the pain of holding on and letting go. Because fear of ending always makes sense. It's always legitimate. Like, of course we're afraid of endings, because endings feel like death. One of the beautiful things about yoga, for those of you who practice yoga, and if you don't, just assume you do, because if you read my blog, you already pretty much practice yoga. Like, my blog is basically an extended yoga practice. But one of the things we do in a physical practice is we practice Shavasana, corpse pose. And what you're doing in that is practicing, it's practicing for being dead. It's a practice for death. And what that means is, it's not as scary as it sounds. What it means is practicing letting go, releasing, softening, meeting fear, not doing. My uncle, who I write about a lot on the blog, who is a terrific, amazing person and kind of a real yogi in my mind, he does this in a more literal way. He actually goes to his grave and takes naps on it. To practice. Just goes to his gravesite. He already knows where his spot is, and he lies down, takes a nap to practice. And while most of us wouldn't want to kind of meet our ending in such an intense way, I think there is a lot of emotional power to endings, and I think there's a lot of fear there, because it's an existential fear. It's a fear of like over, something is gone, and that is really painful. So we don't have to meet our fear of ending in such like an intense way. But I think it is useful to remember that sometimes endings are painful because they're symbolically painful, and to kind of step away from the big universal pain and really connect with, okay, how much of this is from right now? How much of this is true for me right now in this moment? What's going on here? How much of this pain is really, you know, in present time? How much of it is from right now? And stepping away from the larger, bigger fear. Sarah asks about asking for support when you're going through change. Yeah, that's a big one. That is a real big one. And it's about boundaries and guidelines, and maybe even where one thing to consider with this, with the asking for support, because not everyone in our life can give us support. You may have noticed, frustrating as that is, not everyone can give us the support that we would like to get. So boundaries are a big deal. And maybe even just coming up with a list for yourself of what is the type of support that you need. What are the types of supportive answers or questions that would be helpful? Especially for those of us, if you've ever been in a situation of like extreme physical pain or a big life change like divorce or whatever, and everybody has questions, they all want to know. Or we talked a few weeks ago on the blog about Bolivia and all the people in your life who really want you to move to Bolivia already. People have questions. And so one way to ask for support is to write down, well, what would you like them to ask? What would you like them to say? What would be helpful to hear? And then once you have those things, if you like, you can share them. You can say, what I'm needing right now is a lot of support and comfort, and here's the way I'd really like to receive it. And if you can't give it to me in that form right now, I'd kind of prefer not to have anything at all. Or I understand that right now this might be difficult for you, so if you could meet me halfway. But getting as much information as you can for you about what would be helpful, what would be a kind, loving thing to say. A good resource for that is, of course, the Nonviolent Communication book by Marshall Rosenberg. There's a lot of kind of sample sentences in there. Or also, what's the other book that I always recommend? How to Talk So Your Kids Will Listen and Listen So Your Kids Will Talk, or maybe it's the other way around. A lot of great phrases in there for things to say that you can borrow. So you can say, you know, it'd be really helpful for me to hear right now is this. And then they'll either be able to do it or not do it. But coming up with the list is always a really good start. And making sure that you're also giving yourself support. Laura G. says, what about dealing with inertia and or momentum with changes, feeling stuck? So, Laura, I'm not exactly sure, but I'm guessing that you're referring to those moments where things are changing, but then they're just not moving anymore, where you've gotten to a certain point and then you hit the plateau. So I'm going to assume that unless you tell me otherwise.
Kind of. It's like I know I need to make changes, and I even know what changes to make, but I'm kind of in a groove where it's just not happening.
So you know what needs to be done, but things aren't happening.
Right. I just got to kind of smack myself upside the head to do it or something.
Yeah, it's a frustrating thing, and usually... Again, I don't know what's going on for you necessarily in this specific situation. Often what's the case when this starts to happen is that there are some parts of us that are seriously invested in the change not happening. It could be monsters. It could just be like scared selves, or it could be a question that I like to ask that can be a scary one is what is the tragedy of me getting what I want? Which is, I know I want this thing, and I know like 99% of me is on board with me wanting this thing, but if I get it, what is the tragedy that some part of me wants to prevent myself from experiencing? Is there anything in that for you, or is that like completely off topic?
Not really sure.
Okay, so yeah, maybe I'd mess around with that a little bit just to find out. Like, imagine, okay, so let's say, you know, if I waved the magic wand right now and this thing was taken care of, like, are there caveats? Would you take it exactly the way you want it if I could just make it happen this second? Or are there like, but it has to be like this?
It's a tough question, huh?
Yeah, it is a really tough question because often what happens is this, like we want a thing and then we don't make progress on it. Like if I were mapping out the pattern, it would be like, you want the thing, you don't make progress. Then we get upset with ourselves for not making progress. then we're already in like a rut of resistance, so we can't make progress. And then as we start moving through the rut of resistance, it turns out, wait a second, like I want that thing, and yet there's some part of me that is stopping me from wanting the thing or stopping me from acting on it because either I don't want it right now or I don't want some aspect of it or I need it to happen a certain way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Any insights there, or is this still too, like, a little too much?
A lot of work to be done with it.
Got it. Yeah, so I would start with that, and I would start with making that process really as nice as you can stand. So just being like, all right, I don't know why I'm in resistance yet. I'm sure this resistance is here for a reason. I don't have to know what it is. I don't have to know what the tragedy is, but I do also want to prevent it. So if there's some part of me that's keeping me from getting what I want because it's afraid of something horrible happening, I also don't want horrible things to happen to me. I don't know what they are, but yeah, this resistance makes sense even if I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. So just kind of like softening the edges a little bit until you can find out more about what's going on there. But definitely assume normalcy. Like resistance always has a reason.
Right. Thank you.
Sure. And yeah, it's a hard situation to be in. Exactly. And Layla says you get stuck beating yourself up about not making the change, and then you continue not to make the change, right? And then that loop is self-preserving. And actually, while we're talking about that, let me just say one thing about loops. I'm sure anybody on this call has had the experience of getting in a loop, a behavior loop or a habit loop or an experience loop where you just, like, you can't stop being in the loop, right? You do the thing and then you can't, like, it's self-perpetuating. So the thing about loops and interrupting loops is that there are a lot of ways to interrupt a loop. The best way is just to draw attention to it and be like, hey, I'm in a loop. And even if all you end up doing is saying, I'm in a loop, I'm in a loop, I'm in a loop, that's still better than being in the loop. And even if you just end up saying, I'm in a loop, while jumping on one foot and waving your hands in the air and cackling hysterically, that's still a better loop than the previous loop. So any small thing you can do to interrupt the loop is good, as long as it's not violent towards yourself. Because when you interrupt the loop, you're reminding yourself that it is not the entire truth of your being and that it's not the whole world. It's temporary. But loops don't feel temporary because they continue. So resistance builds up a lot of looping, and it's always good to remember that resistance is natural and normal and to be expected because it's trying to protect us even if we can't figure out why yet.
Hi, could you possibly give the chattery password again?
Sure. It is Detective 42.
Thank you.
Sure. And I see someone else on Twitter is having trouble getting into the chat, so I will say maybe try another browser, possibly. Okay. I sometimes find it easier in Safari than in TweetDeck Firefox to get into the chattery. Let's see. There is so much great stuff in the chattery right now. Question from Leanne. Can you talk about doing the same thing with a newer identity? I took a 2-year break and did a lot of inner work, but to make a living, I have to interact with the same world I left. I'm now a freelancer. I am deeply resisting it because I feel like I have to put that identity back on, but I know I don't, but the fear is still there. Oh, that is a gorgeous, gorgeous question. Yeah, there is so much pain in going back, even when we know we're not really going back. The sense of going back is painful, right? So we need to do symbolic things that remind us that it's not back, that it's forward. There's all sorts of, I can't even think of a good example, but basically, like, go to any, you know, read any self-help book or self-help blog or anything in that world of working on your stuff, and somebody eventually will talk about I think the metaphor is usually spiraling or going up a spiral staircase or something like that, but where it's where you appear to be in the same place that you were, but you've actually kind of gone a few loops around and now you are in a slightly new place that looks like the old place. There is so much pain in those places that remind us of the old places. And if this in a very, what Leanne's talking about is a really specific, like I am literally back to where I was and it may be different, but it feels like the same space. And there are all these rules that go along with that space. So it totally makes sense that you would be resisting it and not wanting that identity. And I think any clues and symbols and reminders that you can plant to help remember why this is different would be useful. Things that I would do just off the top of my head, I would come up with a list of maybe like 10 reasons why this is different. And I would probably carry it with me in my pocket, but definitely kind of like have it by your bed or have it places where you can read it and remember. So that you're constantly separating. That was then, this is now, that was then, this is now. Especially if you're freelancing, I imagine there's certain things you can do differently, like maybe wearing different clothes, or at least if you're on the phone or whatever, wearing a silly hat, or doing things to kind of bring more, whether it's costumes, but to bring more playfulness and experimentation in, so that it's you're not actually wearing the old identity. It's almost like a drag performance mocking the old identity and creating something new. So you're saying, I remember what this was like. I'm doing it differently this time. And how am I going to remember that now is not then, even though now reminds me of then? And also I just want to say to you, because this does, it's so frustrating. Most of us, I'm guessing, maybe even all of us on the call have totally been in a similar situation. I remember going back after I became a yoga teacher and I swore I would never go back to bartending. And I had to go back to bartending to make money to finish my teacher training. And after swearing up and down that I'd never go back to the bars, and there I was back at the bar. And it was so frustrating and so painful. And I did a lot at the time to remember that now is not then. Even just like, you know, I made up these like stretches you could do while you were refilling the beer refrigerators. And I hid words in people's cigarette packs. And I just did things to remember that it was different, that now is not then. So, yeah. People are making some great suggestions about sovereignty costumes. And it looks like the chattery has just blocked something, so we'll get a copy of all that in, but I think I've missed a bunch of questions. So if I haven't answered your question and you want to bump it up again, that would be really great. You see, there's something here from Marilyn. It says, change will not occur until the pain of staying the same exceeds the pain of change. Sometimes we're stuck right in the middle. What can we do to make ourselves feel the pain of the same in order to push toward the good change? See, that is super interesting because I've heard that a lot and I actually don't believe it. I mean, I don't mean that it's not true for you. I just don't think that it's true, period. There's this idea that we make change through pain. Some people make change through pain. Often all of us have made change through pain. The idea that we can only make change when it's too painful the way things are, that it has to be something else, that is one effective way of making changes. The truth is that as we grow, there are other ways that we learn to make change, and we learn to make change through love. And that may sound really, like, crazy and creepy, but ultimately change through love is, and I'm not making this a shit, I'm not saying you should be able to change through love, like, it's perfectly fine if you're making changes through pain. I also make changes through pain. It's just that ultimately, eventually, we want to get to the point where we notice when we're making changes through pain and we start making changes through other things, because change through love is a lot more effective and long-lasting. It's kind of like, you know, when when you quit smoking and then you start eating cookies all the time and then you stop eating cookies, but then you start biting your nails and then you stop biting your nails, but then you just have abusive relationships. And that's fun. You know, I did that for a million years. That's what happens when we change through pain. Not always. Sometimes we change through pain and we really make the change. But a lot of times we're like, get me out of this pain, and then we step into the new pain. So I don't think it is possible to make ourselves feel the pain of the same in order to push towards the good change, like Marilyn's suggesting. We can totally do that. And I think it's also possible to shift that pattern too and to say, I'm ready for things to be different now. I don't know how to get there. I do know that exacerbating pain is also a pattern, and I don't have to be in that pattern. So where I would start with this, and again, Marilyn, like, do what's comfortable for you. If what's the best thing for you is, like, I need to feel more of the pain of what's here in order to go through the different, like, do that. I don't even slightly mean to say that that's wrong or that it's not legitimate. Where I would start with things aren't working, things need to change, I don't know what to do, where I would start with that is first with just giving permission, like, okay, things stuck right now, I'm going to let them be the way they are, and I don't have to like it, and I don't have to appreciate it, and everything is horrible, that's fine, that's where I am. From giving permission, I would move into, what do I need? Because my sense is it would be useful to have a conversation with either the monster or the sad, scared self or whatever part of me thinks that I need pain in order to change. If there's a part of me that thinks that I will only truly make something be different through suffering, what does that part of me need? Like, what kind of reassurance does it need? Because that part of me is probably connected to the parts of me that cause me pain in order to do things differently. And ultimately, the pattern that I want to work on is, how do I meet myself with love? And then how do I move from this really painful situation into something that's a little bit more supportive? I think it's super interesting because there is this idea in our culture that you won't make things change unless they start to really suck. And so it's almost like we want things to fall apart so that we will make the change. That's kind of like, it's the philosophy of the people who are like, oh, if I'm just mean enough, then they'll break up with me and I won't have to do it myself. And eventually, it's like we're all trying to get to this point where we can say, here's where I am and it sucks. Here's what I need, comfort, strength, courage, encouragement, possibility, excitement. And here's how I'm going to bring these qualities into my life. And here's what I'm going to do to meet my pain. And it's interesting because what we're talking about here is exactly this point in the middle, the point where, like, nothing's working, nothing's stuck. It's kind of like what Laura was talking about. I know what I want, but I don't know how to get there. And I think what's called for there is just a lot of permission, a lot of, like, of course this is where I am. Of course I don't know what to do. How would I know what to do when my entire life I've made changes through pain? How would I know how to move from pain to something that is not pain when pain has been my reason for making decisions and choices my entire life? Just really kind of acknowledging the need for pain and then asking, well, okay, what needs to happen so that that's not the motivating force in my life anymore? That's probably where I'd start. Louise asks about, what about when change makes you feel lonely? Yeah, change does make you feel lonely sometimes. And I think, well, we feel lonely with change because of two things. One is that our identity itself, like I talked about at the beginning, we're going through this kind of identity moment of who am I exactly and what do I feel and how do I think about things? And then, again, sometimes relationships fall apart and we lose people. So there is loneliness and change. And at the same time, and this is why it's useful to talk to your loneliness monsters, a lot of us, including me, we have a monster that basically says this. if you make these changes, no one will love you anymore. If you make these changes, you will be all alone and you will die alone and you will never have anyone, et cetera, et cetera. It's useful to talk to the loneliness monster because the truth is that as we make these changes, it is true that, yes, some relationships fall apart, but we're making room for better, more interesting, more loving, fun, caring relationships with other people and with ourselves, obviously. So the result of change is not loneliness. The result of being in the process and being with our monsters and our fear and our pain is loneliness. But the result of change itself is the ability to connect with new people who are way more awesome and to be appreciated by those people and to be appreciated by ourselves, to appreciate our own strength and power. So the thing with loneliness is it hurts. It just hurts. It's not fun. Nobody likes the lonely. So part of it is just reminding yourself and your loneliness monsters that this is not the truth of your being. This is a temporary place as you're moving through these changes and transitions and you're actually making room to connect with bigger and better things and with people who will really truly respect you. So that's one part of it. And then the other part is figuring out what are the patterns in the lonely. What does the lonely need? Where have you been here before? What is the real fear in this? And what strengths and resources do you have that you can call on to help you stay feeling supported and cared for? And sometimes even one of the things I love about the blog is that it's a place for all of, because we're all in these kind of intense transition spots in our lives because we're working on our stuff all the time, even though it's not physical connection, being able to check in with each other on Fridays and Sundays and during the week is a really big deal. And I think it's meaningful having spaces where you can connect with people who are also in the same positions. I hope that's helpful to start with. I totally missed this bit about the sovereignty slinky, but please, would somebody make one? Who's making me a sovereignty slinky? I insist on a sovereignty slinky. A sequin, sparkly sovereignty slinky. For everyone who's not in the chattery, oh, the fun. I have no idea what anyone's talking about, but it looks great. Marisa asks, she says, I'm ready to end a pattern, but I don't know what comes next. I carry the idea that change means ending something to start something else, but sometimes we have to end something without knowing what will fill that space. Scary. How? Yes, yes, yes. Terrifying. Terrifying. Completely, completely terrifying. Sometimes we make endings and we do not know what is coming. Completely, totally scary. So one element, which is in and of itself scary, is faith and trust. Another element, which is also scary, is saying, I don't know what's coming in this new space, but I have created this space for good things to happen in. So I have consciously chose, or maybe I didn't choose this ending, but I'm here with this ending, and it is here to make space for a new thing that is good. So I am going to plant seeds for this new thing that is good. So I would start thinking about what are the qualities that I want in this new thing without knowing what it is, but how do I want to feel when I'm in it? What is it going to give me? A great thing to do is to talk to the slightly future you. So not you who is beyond this, but maybe you in a few weeks or you who has already figured out what the new thing is that is taking the place of the old thing, and then ask her some questions. Say, hey, slightly future me, what can you tell me that's going to reassure me? What do you know that I don't know? What do you wish I knew? What kind of advice would you give me? What would you like to tell me? Because the truth is that this new thing is going to be better than the old thing, and if it isn't, then you will change that as well. So starting with just meeting the fear of, yeah, this is completely scary, not knowing what's going to fill the space, and just making an ending. And then finding out, well, what does part of me, assuming that part of me knows, what does she know about what's coming? What would reassure me? And then how do I want to feel with this new thing? What seeds can I plant to make sure that this new thing is going to be awesome? Simone says, you don't have to see the top of the staircase to take the next step up. True. And yet it's totally scarier when you can't see it. Yeah. Oh, great question from Ether Jammer. I love this. What a terrific thing. He says, what do you do when you're in the middle of a change and someone else is insisting that it's the wrong change, that you shouldn't be making it because you should be doing something else? Doesn't that suck completely? Isn't that the worst? Like, it's hard enough to make a change anyway, and then other people are like, who do you think you are to make this change? What are you thinking? You're ruining your life. What are you doing? Yeah, that's horrible. That's not fun. And it's really hard because often when we're making changes, we're already doubting ourselves, and then other people's doubt is intensifying that self-doubt. So, yeah, actually, I would start there. I would assume, like, okay, my self-doubt is being intensified by their doubt. I can't work on their doubt, but I can work on mine. So what am I going to do to help myself feel safe? And then from that place of safety, how am I going to make some boundaries? And one of them is, and if you'd like, you can always, I always tell people, like, use me as your fake business coach. So if you need to tell people in your life, listen, my business coach said that I can't talk about this transition right now while I'm in it, or my business coach said that it's better to, that I need to surround myself with people who are going to help me make this change, or whatever it is. Just use me as your fake business coach to give you a permission slip to not have to talk about it with people. And the other thing you can do, and this is a great NVC maneuver, is to say to them, wow, it totally makes sense to me that you feel nervous and scared and uncomfortable with this transition that I'm making, because you need to know that I'm going to be okay. That makes sense. I also worry about being okay. Here's the thing. Right now, what I need the most is support. I am going ahead with this thing. I'm going to do it anyway. And the thing I need most right now is steady, loving encouragement. I totally understand if you can't give it to me right now because you feel nervous and uncomfortable with what I'm doing because you don't know that I'm going to be okay. At the same time, I'm really clear on what I need. Steady, loving encouragement. And so right now I'm only talking about this with the people in my life who can give that to me, and I will check in with you when you feel like that's something you can do. Or to say, I appreciate that you want me to be okay. I also want me to be okay, and I'm trying to figure this out. I'll talk to you when I have more information. Something like that. Because the truth is that if we're surrounded by enough people who think that we're making the wrong changes, it will intensify our self-doubt and we will stop doing what needs to be done. And so we really have to protect ourselves, even from people who really love us and really care about us, even when everything they say comes from love. Sometimes we have to make sure that we are surrounded by people who get it, people who have context. And so we can appreciate them for wanting us to do the right things in our lives. And at the same time, it isn't always helpful to be around people who wish that we were making the changes that they would make for us, if that makes sense. Super wise insight from Jessie. She says, pain often elicits a compassionate response from myself. It's interesting that maybe I'm craving compassion and I don't know how to give it without the painful stimuli. And that's such a great point because, yeah, if we're used to receiving compassion from pain, then obviously we're going to keep bringing up pain in order to get what's needed. Yeah. Do you have a question? Amy says, what about when someone forces a change on you that you didn't want? I'm thinking of changes like rejection, losing a job, or losing a friend, things like that. Oh, yeah. That is not fun either, huh? So, when somebody else makes a change, and as a result of that change, we are no longer in their life, right? They've fired us. They have decided they don't want to be friends with us anymore. They're breaking up with us. Super painful, obviously. I think we've all been there. And the truth is there's not a whole lot we can do about it, right? We can't really challenge the change or make them change the change or make them be different than where they are. All we can do is take care of ourselves. And I think one of the important aspects of taking care of ourselves in these situations and meeting that pain is what I talked about a little before, separating now from then. Because what happens so often is that all of our rejection stories get smooshed up together. And so this experience of this person doesn't want to be with me in this capacity gets all mooshed up with every other time that someone else didn't want to be with us in whatever capacity. And so we're dealing with not just the pain from now, but that entire lifespan of pain. Everything from like early childhood abandonment to, you know, everything else. So one thing is just saying, like, what is happening now? Which parts of this are from now as opposed to then? And is it possible to just deal with the now? Deal with the then later. Another thing to talk about with yourself or to think over with yourself is, again, back to what we said, I think, with the aardvark, is about qualities. So what are the good qualities that I got from that relationship, and how am I going to be giving them to myself right now? And how can I remind myself that this is not about me? Because it always seems like it is, right? I mean, there's nothing more personal than somebody not wanting you in their life. And yet, at the same time, it's their stuff, and it's their experience. And it might or might not be true, but we can really only work on the stuff that's ours. And the stuff that's ours is the rejection pain and the hurt and everything that's from now and everything we need. But really, like, oh, it's so hard. It is so, so hard. And, it really is. Andrew, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I had one, and it's not, I don't know if it's really clear in my mind right now, but I'm a leader in a spiritual community, and I feel like I've outgrown it, and I want to leave, but I feel all, like, this commitment that I made to all of these people, and it just really hurts to think about leaving them.
Yeah, so you've made the personal change, and you know it needs to happen next, but then you're still kind of involved in this relationship with them.
Yeah. I'm just kind of, like, being absent right now and asking other people to cover for me for this and that without being honest. I don't want to be there at all. I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, that is...
I can't be a person now that I say it.
You know, saying things, it's super challenging. And the truth is that even when it's not about them, yeah, people will make it about them. And as anyone who has ever heard or said the phrase, it's not you, it's me, you know, it's like that never works. And yet it's so often true. I think there's something to be said about, and I'll reference here, Hero's beautiful blog post called, I don't know what the link is, somebody can maybe put it in the chattery. HeroBoga.com/blog something. She wrote a post about being an angel and not a shepherd. And kind of the idea is that when we try to take care of everyone in the ways that they want to be taken care of, it's actually not that good for their growth, and it's definitely not good for us. And when we step away, which is really painful because it feels like rejection and it feels as though we're we feel anxious because we think we're leaving them and abandoning them, it's really good for everyone involved. Like stepping away and stepping back is one of the kindest things we can do for people, because when we're angeling and not shepherding, they get to grow and to come into themselves. And it's a really painful thing to do. It's a painful thing to do. I mean, parents go through this when you have to let your kids, you know, they get to the point where they're going to sleep in their own beds, or when they get to the point where they're going to go to school. And we do this in so many situations in life where this stepping back is really painful. One of the most useful experiences I had, I did a session with Hiro about my kitchen table program probably a year and a half ago, where I really just wanted to take care of everyone in there all the time, and I'd get really anxious when people weren't getting taken care of. And she just showed me what happened when I stepped away, which is that everyone grew and didn't just grow, like they really came into their radiance, you know, when I wasn't caring for them anymore. So I don't have a good way of how to do this, but in terms of just, if you have outgrown this community, then you being there isn't good for them. And even though there may be sadness and discomfort about not having you, it's better for their spiritual growth to not have a leader who is not the right fit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that feels way, way better now.
In terms of what to say to them, I have no idea. Maybe someone in the chat room will have like a really wise phrase or something. But I think the stepping away will be really powerful, and it will be good for their growth, and everyone will expand and connect to themselves more, because things will just be more in alignment.
Yeah, I can really feel that now. I don't feel as scared about saying something.
Well, I hope, you know, good luck with that. I hope you find, I trust that the right words will show up somehow. But yeah, that's super hard.
Thank you.
Man, life is challenging and confusing. It's a nice suggestion from Tori that maybe something about stepping away will let new leaders develop. Yeah, it is definitely possible. Does someone else want to step on star 6 while I go through the chattery and see what I missed?
Savvy, it's Andrew.
Andrew, hello.
Hello. I'm not sure if it's really a question or just something I'm noting. I've just moved from Asia back to England, and so that's a pretty major transition from city back to living upstairs from my mother-in-law. And what I'm noticing about the transition is that there's a part of me that's just like, okay, we've been 2 weeks, enough already. I'm not allowed to be in transition anymore. And I wonder whether you've got anything to say about, you know, like, there's, I'm just noticing that things take much longer. Like, that I'm needing to allow more time, more space, more gentleness, having lower expectations of myself because I'm in transition. And then there's another part that's going, well, you shouldn't be in transition. You've got a desk now, for goodness sake. I wonder if you've got anything to say about that. I'm not sure that's a very clear question.
I think that was a wonderfully clear question. And I think you summed up perfectly that kind of, that the fighting back and forth between the wise part of us who knows that things take time and the part of you that really wants stuff to happen, which is also a wise part. It's just a lot more impatient. And they're both right, you know. Things do take much longer than you'd think. As you know, obviously, most of us don't allow enough time for even the big things like death and grieving and breakups and relationships ending. even those we don't spend enough time with, but definitely things like just having a fight with a friend or things not going in your business the way you want them to. Like, those things are so painful, and we just kind of rush through them. So things do need time, and they do take longer than we think. And at the same time, that voice that's saying, get the hell over it already, while it doesn't say it in a very loving way, it does sometimes have the loving intention of knowing that we are strong and courageous and capable, and that we can do things even while we are in transitions, and we can accomplish things even while we are a wreck. So they're totally both right. I think it's useful just to notice that, and to notice that pull of, like, where are we being violent towards ourselves? Where are we really not allowing the spaciousness? And then taking that, kind of sucking out that sweet quality of the one that wants us to do things, and taking, okay, I'll take the sweetness, but I'm not taking the abuse.
I've got a post-it in front of me. I had, like, 7 things that I was going to do, and then it was 5, and then it was 3, and then I had an hour, and I have the 2 things written on it, and then underneath it says in capital letters, this is enough, underlined.
Nice.
And then I only got one of them done. So I'm just interested now. It takes a lot longer.
It really does. And you know, the other, I think last week or something, I had this crappy day, and I wrote this blog post about how I was going to do only 10 things instead of 17 million. I really only ended up doing 3 of them, and really, like, completely half-assedly at that. So, yeah, it's such a painful thing. We know theoretically that this is enough, and it should be enough, and it could be enough, and oh, enoughness. And at the same time, we live in a world that's full of pressure and expectations, and we just pour it on ourselves. And, yeah, I have nothing intelligent to say about that other than that you're completely right. I hope that was helpful to just kind of get the insight out. Excellent. I'm going to, we just have a couple minutes left. I know there's like 17,000 billion questions that I missed. And so if I missed your question, it's not because I don't like you or because I didn't think it was a brilliant question, but just because the chattery only holds so much before it kind of drops off. And so God knows how many things I've missed. But if you have something you really want to know about, if you could bump up your question or *6 to ask. Yes, did someone just unmute? All right, I will look through the chattery again. Can I just say how many, like, incredibly intelligent, kind, loving, wonderful people there are in this chat room right now? I wish everyone in the world could be here to see how nice it is. So much sweetness. Sarah Beth had a question about noticing anxiety, physical sensations of anxiety in the chest and the throat, and then wondering if we could identify the sensations that go with that witchy productive mood. That might be useful. So I think if I understood this correctly, it's blocked off half your question, Sarah Beth. Kind of making the physical transition from those places of tightness to places of possibility. So what that brings up for me is, first, obviously, the noticing, the physical noticing of saying, oh, my body's doing this thing, therefore I'm in my resistance, or I'm in the loop, or I'm in this place of pain. Okay, I have my anxiety sensation. That's information. And then how am I going to build a bridge to this new sensation, which is the one that I want to have? So, again, the first place that I always start is with allowing and legitimacy and just saying, okay, this is me being anxious. This is my anxiety. This is my anxiety in my body. It is not the whole truth of me. It is not the entirety of my being. This is where I am right now. I am allowed to be there. It's perfectly reasonable that I would be feeling anxious right now, even if I don't know or remember why. And then I would start to separate out. And I would start with saying, okay, how much of this anxiety is mine? Is it possible that some of this anxiety belongs to my blog readers or to my family or to other people in my life, and I've just picked up on it by being ridiculously sensitive? How much of this is mine? What percentage? And if there's any of it that's not mine, can I give it back? Can I let it go on its way? And how much of it is from now? How much of it is really present? Or how much of it is old anxiety that I'm still being anxious about things that have totally sorted themselves out and I've just forgotten to stop worrying about them? So if there's any of this anxiety that isn't from now, that isn't relevant to right now, giving that back as well. And then how much of this anxiety is really, is it helping me? I'm sure its intention is to help me. It's to help motivate me. It's to help me get my act together and things like that. But how much of it is really, honestly, actively helping me feel safe and supported? Not very much. So if there's any of that that's willing to transform or be released, then rock on. And then the next thing I do to separate is, again, what is different from now and then? So this might be reminding me of every other time in my life that I felt anxious, but what is different about now? How am I more safe and more secure now? What strengths and resources do I have on my side? So even though it's legitimate for me to feel anxious, and even though it's natural and normal, and of course I would feel anxious, at the same time, what are the strengths and resources that are going to help me feel really grounded and supported, and what can I do next, and then where am I going to feel that in my body? Times in my life when I felt really confident or comfortable or at ease or at home in myself and my body, where have I felt that? Does it have a color? Does it have a shape? Does it have a texture? And can I bring some of that into the tightness and anxiety in my chest or my belly or my throat or wherever it happens to be? And that's how I would start bridging. Another way to bridge between sensations is, of course, metaphor mouth. You can come up with a metaphor for the anxiety and then a metaphor for how you'd like to be feeling and come up with kind of some in-between passages, places that can get you from one to the other. And I like that you've identified this witchy productive mood. And so maybe there are some attributes of being witchy productive. And maybe they live in certain places, and you could, again, use costumes or signs or reminders or clues to kind of reconfigure or reconstruct that witchy productive thing. I think we can have a last question. Anyone want to *6 to unmute, and I will look through the rest of the chatter and see what I missed.
Hobby, this is Claire.
Hi, Claire.
Hi. Gosh, this is my first call. This has been really interesting. So what I'm really needing, I think, is more ways to get my body information. I'm really, really good at being in my head. So the talking part, I think, is less effective for me, but I don't really know what all these getting into my body wisdom tricks are.
Excellent.
And you seem to have, you talked about force field at the beginning, and I didn't know what that was at all.
Yeah, force field, they're like, I totally just make that up. I'm just like, hey, force field, show up. It's completely, it's almost like a mental thing that I use my body for. A couple of different body things that might be useful in terms of practices. I don't know if you're familiar with yoga nidra, yoga and then nidra, N-I-D-R-A. You can look up online some recordings. And that's, it's like guided relaxation. That gets you in touch with different sensations in your body and helps you create and recreate and then take apart these feelings and perceptions in different parts of your body. It's kind of a really nice mix of body-mind. Obviously, Shivanatha, the dance of Shiva, is really, really good for getting right into your body and for deconstructing and reconstructing patterns and literally doing that with your body so that you can see how you create them, take them apart in your body.
I've started the Shivanatha. I've only been doing it for about a week, but of course I'm really impatient for something to happen.
Well, go ahead to level 2 then. Start level 2 and just mess around with it. Get completely lost.
Okay.
Another thing is, if you're a head person, this is good, is talking to different parts of your body. Just being like, hey, Hams, what do you know about this anxiety? Anything? Anything at all? And then your head is going to be like, that's a stupid question. And you'll say, I know it is, head. That's why I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to my hams. And you just keep kind of like, you know, interacting and finding out what your body knows about where it stores anxiety and where it stores pain and where it stores memories and what it wants you to know.
Good. Okay. That's a lot to chew on. That's great. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks, Claire. And yay for brand new Shivanauts.
Woohoo!
Excellent. All right. It is 4:15, so I am going to end this thing here. Maybe we can take just another minute to take a breath, touch in with the body, maybe hand on your heart or hand on your belly. Feel your force field, blow a bubble, have a yawn. For any question I didn't get to, I am so completely sorry. Again, it wasn't you. It was me not catching up to it in the chat room. So feel free to copy and paste it into like a comment on a blog post or something, and maybe we'll get to it at a future point. So I am going to just wish so much love and support to everyone. I'm going to unmute us all so we can wave goodbye to each other. I ended up not hitting anyone with a giant stick. So goodbye, everyone. Thank you for doing this with me. Love
thank
to
you.
All.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Holly.
Bye.
That was Selma again.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Holly. That was awesome.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thanks,
awesome.
Selma.